Hello everyone, welcome back to the show, and today's guest is Greg Sullivan. Greg, how you going, mate?
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for having me today.
No worries. Thanks for coming on, mate. We met actually at James's ranch when we were over there, and you've actually got Jay Seti as well. Do you want to tell everyone, you know, how would you like to approach this? How did this all begin for you?
Well, yeah, it was great to meet you guys, and it's amazing to see, you know, it was like three continents, you know, three, you know, Australia, Asia, and America all meeting up there at once, and it was a powerful trip that time too, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I haven't done a lot of these English interviews, so it's nice to kind of try and get my story straight in English, but as well. But yeah, we just had our fifth anniversary of Jay Seti, and you know, it's kind of been a flying by the seat of your pants ride for me out here. I've been in Japan 10 years in total. In the last, the first five, I always tell people, ended up being just sort of like a preparation, you know, with learning, picking up the language by being here and just kind of by osmosis. And then, you know, learning the ropes as far as travel and just living here. I really, really got into living here right in the first 6 months even. So, I started my journey way back, you know, before that, I was in New Zealand for half a year, just sort of backpacking around, you know, and then, I was guided through, you know, music and all sorts of different, meetings to come up here. And a good friend of mine, was, you know, doing the English teaching thing here. So before he left, I went out and, you know, stayed with them and then just kind of stayed on. I'd been hoping to live in Japan anyway. So the idea was there. And so at that time, instead of going back to the U.S., this was post 9/11. So I was really kind of feeling that, you know, wanted to get away from the George W. Bush America there any way I could. So instead of going back from New Zealand to America, I cut my stay there a half a year short and just traded my ticket back to the U.S. right up to Japan. So and then stayed there ever since. So these 5 years have been it's been an amazing, you know, journey, you know, and it's, I kind of call it, it's been 0 to 90 in, you know, the 0 to 60 test. It's almost been 0 to 90. And, you know, I was prepared for a lot of it now that I look back, over the years with these kind of seed experiences. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I guess, you know, it's, I won't give you the whole life story, but I want to rewind, almost to like, you know, probably even high school where I was working with a lot of, you know, ambient music, playing a lot of experimental music. Mm-hmm. And that was preparation for me, I think, for, kind of deep meditative states. So we were all into the avant-garde and around New York City, there's, you know, a real big heavy avant-garde scene since the 1960s, like, John Cage and you know, a lot of the new music composers and people like that, as well as, you know, any kind of genre you could imagine. So we were on the, you know, forefront of like electronic music when that was coming over from England, and as well as a lot of kind of really creative music during the 90s there. So that was sort of, you know, and then also playing and producing music. So that eventually led into me having a band and also working at a pretty well-equipped music studio. So I studied music in college in New York City, and so I was constantly, you know, involved with production projects and things like that. So in the end, that all had a background of sort of, you know, cosmic consciousness slash meditative states there, because you know, a lot of them were people like Lamont Young. They had this place in New York City where it's like, I think it was called the Dream House. And, you know, you go down there and they had these frequencies blasting through a whole bunch of speakers in the room and angled in a way so that depending on how you turn your head, you would hear different beat frequencies, you know?
That's true for you.
So, yeah. So just we always loved getting into that stuff. I won't mention some of the other catalysts that were going on during those days. But, yeah, I was real big in the rave scene and sort of more always on the on the more artistic end of that, you know, not quite a club party scene, but more on the artistic end of all that stuff. So when I was first in, when I first made it to Japan here, I had my band recording project going on, and I fell into an art community in Kyushu, which is kind of in the western part of the country. So I was in good hands there with a good friend I met. He was from Sydney. And then all the rest of the people locally from the Japanese community here. So that helped me really get in with language, you know, threw me into the deep end with most people who couldn't really speak English at all. So the way I picked up Japanese was almost like music with just the hearing skills. And at that time I had cut my teeth at a studio for a good couple of years there around 9/11, before and after 9/11 there in the Connecticut area. So I was raised outside of New York City. And then did the studio work there after I graduated college. And then that all just kind of led to me, I knew that the music thing wasn't going to be it wasn't my full, my highest calling, I guess you might say. So that, you know, I ended up taking a sort of what would have been a year-long sabbatical to New Zealand. And that just, that just turned into going to Japan. I met some really key people on my journey there in New Zealand who were from Japan. And then one thing led to another. So, so that's the first 5 years, basically. You know, it's and during those, I think it was 2007. I was actually before I came back to the U.S. I moved back to the U.S. With really no plans to live in Japan, perhaps ever again. It was then I first heard, and I was getting a major download through, you know, the powers of the internet. In high school, we had read a lot of. Stuff like my dad had given me a book called The Occult Connection, so I was really aware of the Sumerian bloodline theories and all that stuff way back in my formative years of high school and stuff. So also a real big one was The Gods of Eden. That's a major kind of masterpiece in the genre. So those were quite heavy books to be reading halfway through high school. So, yeah. So we were talking about, you know, Nazi, you know, anti-gravity technology and ET bloodlines and all that stuff. So, you know, looking back, that kind of brought on contact that was, it might not have been visual or physical, but there was a conscious element of contact happening at that time and even way back then too. Basically going from there, being in these formative years here, in the first part of Japan here, picking up those experiences in 2007, all that information, on the internet then, you know, discovering all that stuff again for the second time created this whole kind of, second wave of, interest in all the metaphysical topics and all that stuff. But this time it was like beyond exponential, you know, how, discovering the tools and how much work had gone on without us even knowing it in the interim. So I was listening to, you know, certain interviews and stuff. I was listening up to 4 to 6 hours a day. It was like this major download period of, I think it was about probably 6 months there in Tokyo when I was living there. By that time, I had stabilized my work schedule enough so that I had time in the afternoon that was free. And it was there that I heard passing mention of, James's Ranch. So in 2007, my best friend had a wedding in Portland. So I flew back to Portland, Oregon. And another good friend of mine lived even closer to the ranch in the Washington state area there. So I was just looking up the words, you know, this town, Trout Lake, on Google Map there and realized, oh man, this is only like an hour and a half from my friend's house here. So on my last night before I went back to Japan, I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to make it or not, but I did swing by. And at the time, James was not there. There was another kind of young volunteer staff who was there helping me out. But even from his name, there was a bunch of synchronicities happening. And we had a pretty nice little compact shot of contact in the next 3 or 4 hours. So, you know, that was one major seed kind of trigger event, you know, I'd say. So I was not only... changed on the spot there, but then there was a lot of stuff that was kind of triggered, an Alka-Seltzer almost. It was just bubbling up over the next few years, you know. So it's been quite a, it's been, you know, it's, I call myself, you know, I'm one of, I look at myself like an awakened starseed more than a contactee, because as, you know, as time's gone on, you know, the contact thing now has this bigger background of, you know, the ascension cycle and everything else. So, so I always kind of try and present my story as, you know, I was the average everyday kind of artist who had this, you know, a few kind of sort of pre-programmed trigger events happen. And this was all written into my my you know, soul contract or whatever else. All those theories, all those ideas are, very, they're very, they seem really like very valid explanations for what I've experienced, So it's been cool to corroborate some of a lot of other people's research through my story and my journey.
Well, it's really just incarnated here playing a part. Like, I hanged out with you, and like we'll sit there with the Japanese crew you brought over. We're doing a table tipping session, and we're all getting the same thing with Haog. And just other things, you know what I mean? This is where it's like you're getting the information, like we're all getting the same information, and this is what it's about, is people empowering themselves and then going to others like yourself and James and that to have experiences, or maybe, work themselves into contact. Because some people, it's like as if there's a mechanism that they're not ready for contact by themselves, though they do have it on a telepathic level, but they'll start out with a group contact experience. They'll go to one of these things that you'll hold, or James or myself, and it starts them on a conscious awakening, individually in a different way. So, this is where, lots of people are going through their experiences right now, and it seems to be exponentially picking up more and more. But how did you go from that at the ranch to starting up J City?
Good question. Yeah, thanks. So that was a really key, after I went to the ranch and I came back like just completely powered up as far as like life force energy. I think a lot of the energy of the land I absorbed there, and that experience was resonating for months in a really powerful way after I got back. So within the next year and change year or so, I went back, and my then. I had some another a couple other really powerful experiences. My partner, my girlfriend at the time, was living with me, and she had a burglar come in. And we were on our fourth date. She moved into my place. She would. It was like all of these strange things that a burglar came in and kind of almost choked her. After that one night, she couldn't live at her place anymore. So. This was all soul contract stuff. We went back to the States together, and she ended up being one of the main players in getting me back here. So that period between what was it, 2000, end of 2007, summer 2000, I'm sorry, summer 2008 into 2009, that year and a half was the absolute crux period where I went back. Spent 6 months sending stuff back on boats to my place, back to America.
God.
I moved back to the States. We were there for the summer with her. She went back to Japan, and then I was ready to just, settle down. I actually was interviewing jobs in Kentucky, and I was ready to live anywhere, because I had been, I had lived my 5 years in Japan to the fullest. I was so busy by the end of it, just so I was pretty exhausted. Fund wise and time and energy wise, so I was ready for a good just mellow recharge, and during that time I had a couple, not a lot more direct personal contact. I'll tell you about this. One thing I wanted to keep going was the Japanese language, keep my language skills up. So I was interviewing at Japanese companies in the States, and I was leaving the Boston area to fly out to an interview in Kentucky, which is kind of. On the way to the Midwest there, at the airport, my flight got delayed, and I had been seeing, flashes in the sky, and noticing the chemtrails. Thanks to chemtrails, that turned into helping me, realize there was a lot going on in the daylight hours too. With the white lights flying around and things flying in and around the chemtrails. So because of that, I actually had this main another really major revelation. From the ETs via the cloud ships, so I was at the airport with these big glass windows in the gate, and I noticed, there's a couple little chemtrails there, and then all of a sudden I noticed that in a cloudless sky there was these low black clouds right over the one runway, a few, couple dozen meters just over in the air there, and they proceeded to, start to. Disappear right in front of me, so I was pulled into this experience there in the airport where there was like I got a major flash, and I got this hit like look over here, it was like, and I got this telepathic hit, and then I watched these four clouds that were puffed just in a line, disappear one by one, And then, you know, so there was this major consciousness interaction happening there, and I was like, oh my God, this is something right out of the, and this is like biblical. That's how they camouflage themselves, you know, to move around. And it was a whole nother dimension, whole nother stage of realizing how it's all around us, you know, the conscious contact and the actual ETs themselves. They can be in so many, take so many different forms. So then I was in, actually, I got a, after that, I was in LA for a time. That was really great because my cousin, they put me up for a month in LA, and I was doing all sorts of interviews, and I was like, you know, I ditched the country thing, and I was thinking, hey, well, you know, I was kind of high flying there in Japan. I might as well, you know, California is, you know, a decent place to live. And it was literally like, I was like, any day I could have had a job the next day. And my guides and stuff, where I could tell they were really just trying to keep, I had a lot of kind of positive interference, you might call it. You know, I always refer to people to that movie Adjustment Bureau, which shows a lot of the way the guides kind of get in the way in a good way to keep you on track. So I experienced a lot of that, and then it ended up being really great because my cousin who put me up there passed away a couple of years later. So that was a really great time. You know, all these things have meaning, we realized later. So I ended up going back to New York area and landed there, where I was working in sort of a high-rise building, and I had a lot of a kind of I guess you might call it energetic surgery, or kind of like a lot of opening energetics experiences there, even during work hours. And we had again, this huge windows looking out over the East River there. And I was just seeing all sorts of flashing craft and stuff. I wrote in one of my books, there was even a funny story. I was getting chewed out by a manager there. And in the craft came to back me up, and they flashed at him. And I just saw him look up. He just almost dropped his notepad. He was like, and I was like, "What's there? Is there something wrong?" He's like, oh, "No, nothing, nothing." You know, so it was pretty cool. You know? Yeah, during the time I was at the, you know, I would go out to a local bookstore on my lunch breaks. The office was not far from the Theosophical Society in Manhattan, there, Midtown, and I was going to another bookstore and kind of just chewing away at things like detoxing the body and. You know, learning all stuff like that. I had a bunch of more sightings in New York, in the city, and surrounding areas around in my apartment there. A couple of those were like had the premonition kind of, you know, telepathy to go with them. So I was getting prepped up to lead these kind of events, you know, all during that time. And then we went into crux time, where my long distance girlfriend, or you know, then fiance at the time, was saying, you know. You know, she's basically not going to come to America, and so you know, either
get your
you come
backside
back,
over here.
either do something or get off the pie. You know, so that was a major crisis event. It was at the end of 2009, so I ended up. I know, you know, there was definitely not a lot of support coming from the family there on that one, but it was something I had to do, and I had major guidance, and I went into another, again, just this really kind of like really natural state of telepathy, saying, you know, if you I had always known there I had always known there was something more waiting in Japan. Even during those first 5 years, I was during my early years there, I knew there was something big that I was supposed to do there, but I couldn't put my finger on it. So and then I was shown for a fact that, you know, if I did go back and kind of jump over this hurdle, that there was, you know, something that I needed to do there, or, you know, it wouldn't be just for those private reasons, you know, personal reasons. So lo and behold, that was definitely the fact. I can't even imagine not having come back now. That was like one of the biggest turning, you know, forks in the road of my entire life. So at that time, you know, again, just starting to catch on to guidance and had a lot more direct personal contact with the craft and different sightings. So yeah, and then I made the leap and then came back. That's it. Yeah.
And now you're taking people around the world and holding events and sky watches and how is it there in Japan? Like, we see a lot of the stuff since Fukushima and that sort of thing. What's it like being on the ground there amongst the people? Like, you know, what are you experiencing there that may or may not be in the media, like report wise, and how are the people doing over there since the huge tsunami and what's happened with the radiation and all that sort of thing?
Yeah, that's a good question. Definitely, it's definitely an island nation in terms of what information goes out, and then, and even more so what comes in. You know, so I came here and found that you know, although there was a ton of, you know, a very lively spiritual community, the whole UFO and contact scene was very behind the times, and a lot of the information we take for granted in the English speaking community is sort of just was completely sidelined. So I was starting from a point of reference that I was starting with information that people had no point of reference to. So that was a real unique challenge at first. So I think, you know, I've seen that, you know, in the beginning, a lot of Japanese UFO media, it was mostly foreign based. So they haven't had a real long, there's researchers here, but, they actually had more of their boom sort of in the, 60s, 70s and 80s, you know,
with kind the,
of
Billy Meyer stuff. And
actually more so Adamski, you know, George Adamski.
Yes, old school contact there, you know,
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's, I've heard that, you know, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of countries in Europe and I don't know about Australia, but, you know, that it, outside of America, that information was way more popular. So we get a lot of people who are in that age group who are, you know, 50 and up, you know, 60 and up. So they're really interested. And you know, with the Japanese society here, the people who are older and retired have more time to follow their own interests. You know, it's unfortunate that the young people here, they're on the hamster wheel, you know, from all through school and then right into the system. So it's a very, you know, work-oriented society, as you can probably imagine. So just kind of trying to draw a picture here of where Jay City, you know, exists, is that we basically I landed here and found that there was books on ascension and books on all sorts of other spiritual stuff, you know, tons of yoga and whatever else. But when it comes to, you know, disclosure and or benevolent contact, there was really almost nothing. That's why, you know, I kind of made it a point to not only make our program, but also, you know, introduce the best of what I could find, you know, and the references we had that had been were useful for me as well on my learning experience. So in the beginning, I first had Jay saying, I also had another project called Superlogical. Superlogical was a word that came from the Zen Buddhist teacher, Daisetsu Suzuki. He brought Zen Buddhism to the Western world. And in his book, it's a word that's not even in the English dictionary. But, you know, as you can guess, as you can gather, it means, you know, super logical, like you could interpret it. Well, it's like, you know, beyond logical or existing above logic, you know, the realm of consciousness. So that word actually appeared on my cell phone. That was the experience that because I was seeing a bunch of stuff, like I said, on my way in before I came back here, that I always had that kernel of doubt still in the, you know, inside. But that experience with the ETs, they broadcasted that word. They took it right out of my head and they put it onto my cell phone in this place where nothing, where you can't really make any changes.
Yeah.
So that really just was the one key. That was the experience that just brought me over that 100% line of getting over doubt. I'm trying to, you know, give you a picture, because the Fukushima thing happened during our second year here, and I was still in the kind of, that was actually the catalyst experience to for Jay Seti going full time, and it was again this unbelievable orchestration the way I experienced it. I live on the other side of the country, in the far western island. So when that happened, I was working at a video company. And so at first there was people saying, you know, there was this huge earthquake in Tokyo. So, and then the details unfolded, you know, from that evening on with it wasn't only in Tokyo, it was in Fukushima and everything else. And then shortly after that whole, you know, the tsunami came and everything. So, experiencing that was really, you know, I was in 9/11 in New York, in the New York area. I had lived in that area. I was at the Twin Towers before, just a few days before 9/11 itself.
That's hardcore. So you're at like both major, in the vicinity yeah. of both, you know, huge events for modern times.
Yes. Yes, definitely. So the New York, the 9/11 thing in the States was much more, was way more on the mind control thing with the media. So, but here, it wasn't as panicky in terms of the terror aspect, but it was I the part of the freaky thing about it was that I was already half moved into the Tokyo area at the time. That was part of this orchestrated thing. So I cleared the decks where I was living in order to move to Tokyo because my first book was coming out, and then I had literally half my stuff was already at at this place that was not too far from the ocean. So it was really an interesting dance there to deal with all that. The country is so efficient and they deal with crisis so well that there wasn't there was delays and everything in shipping and like all that stuff, and people were taking some time off work obviously, but it wasn't as really bad. It wasn't as there wasn't a major infra as major of an infrastructure failure as you might have as you might imagine. And people here have been super resilient. The whole rest of the country, people were going up there right after the disaster, bringing water and supplies and everything. So, I know we didn't actually take part in that. I didn't actually make it up there until last year, for the first time. But so there's people definitely dedicated to moving around and dealing with the, fixing the grids and everything. A lot of people in the Shinto, the Japanese native, animism. Philosophy, the Shinto shrine network. There's a lot of star seeds here that are on the sort of pilgrim path, and that's really what I was on as well for the first several years. Which is they're being guided to go around and to be at certain places at certain times within the shrine network. So I think that met a lot of people doing that around that time as well. There were the Fukushima sightings around the disaster definitely were on TV here a little bit, but it's been more of the contact we experience has been way more it's been more of its own thing, you know what I mean? So it's we haven't expressly when we asked for healing on the earth and everything like that, it's we always think about the radiation, but when I was first up there last year, I could feel the energy. It was like it's in its own shield. That whole area is in its own bubble right now. So I felt a lot of presence of the divine mother energy. Kuan Yin, who they call Kanon here, as well as Mother Mary and everything like that. So it was it's almost like it's in its own protective higher dimensional shielding right up there right now. So
In saying that, your thought, am I right in saying this series, the documentary to the Japanese people as well, or you've helped to be able to do that?
yes, yeah, again, so we brought my experience started at Mount Adams, but I had kind of right before coming back to Japan, I had really kind of realized about the C5 protocols and everything like that, and that was sort of like trying to see how they would work here, and put them with the contact that I was already having, and pretty much the stuff that was in the training manual. I contacted the staff there at CSETI and everything, and got the training manual, and it was sort of a DIY thing, and the results that were in there were pretty much almost 100% with what I was already experiencing. So it was really super. It was natural. And then during the first 6 months of prepping J City, I was really kind of diving deep into the meditation techniques and the image training there going on there. And I paired that along with my sound background with the solfeggio frequencies to add. I wanted to give that extra cushion for people because the some of the visualization is kind of high level meditation. You have to be kind of used to meditating a little bit, or it helps to rather. But what I experienced when we started to do our events was that they started out very small, was that the people, the Japanese sort of social mind here, the hive mind, is such that you don't have to work very hard to get that group coherence, which was very helpful for me because I, you know,
That
I,
is,
again, I'm,
yeah.
yeah. So again, here's the part of the 0 to 90. I had my own experience, but the nice thing is that it was like, all those factors helped to come into play where, I didn't need a whole lot of, formal training. That's what's amazing about the how powerful the ET, the backup on the ETs is, and also those kind of the fact that those kind of protocols exist is really nice. So yeah, we went ahead and started out slowly with doing our own kind of events, and then we the reason why I mentioned that spiritual community before was that we quickly got I got a couple local TV experiences, and then I hooked up with one of the main spiritual publications here. So we started to have this hybrid of participants where people who had zero experience and were just interested, that's really the best kind. And then there's the people who had a lot of book knowledge about the topic, and a lot of kind of imagery from the past. And then there was people who were just they were well studied in all sorts of other semi-related or semi-connected spiritual fields, so yeah, it's been a great mix of folks, and we've had just an amazing high energy, just a constant, 5-year run of just unbelievable contacts. So it's been such that I would be out there in the first 6 months. I think I ditched any documenting or writing stuff down or all that stuff just went out the window. It was just like get into the flow, and like you said, it just becomes this portal for people to have that catalyst experience. And there were so many that it was like a pointless pinpoint kind of thing. We were having anywhere from 10 to 50 people at different events. So just dealing with that on a logistics standpoint with just me pretty much for the first 4 years was such that I couldn't deal with a lot of the admin stuff of, I couldn't be the cameraman, the log person and everything all at the same time. So in some way, in some schools of thought, you're supposed to delegate those tasks, but I just kind of got into the thing where it's like, hey, I'm gonna navigate this and we'll have our experience. And then it was in the beginning, it was almost like brute force, and then in the end, ETs would always appear. So, we had a lot of the experience we've had actually, Peter, is that they're already in the field when we get there. I kind of get the feeling that yeah. So it's almost like not calling them in from way in out of deep space. It's calling them in out of the ast it's out of the in their kind of phase shifted state. So you get into we would. Happen, we would set up in the field, and I would see little flashes and little shimmers of energy. They would make their presence known, and then it's like, hey, now let's get everyone else to that level. And then we would do different meditations and do the image training, and then you'd click over that line where they would come out of and drop their frequency down into the visual. So there's been just countless stories along the way there of just pretty amazing synchronicities and sightings there.
It's amazing how it plays out. Like, we're hanging out at James's, and on the documentary I did for James with Soul, you can see, like, there's even ground activity where the lights are blinking, and you guys were there for that, and also the orbs as well. There was a few flybys and things like that. But, it's like I say to people that come to the Skywatch as we do here, like, that's all cool, the stuff in the air, but trying to get that group consciousness and just everyone to sort of chill out, get used to each other's energies, because it's different. It's not so much like Japan, but then you want them to see the wispy stuff walking about, and then they realize, like you're saying, it's already there. A lot of the times the transparent crafts will come out of trees and things like that, and they're rectangular or this shape, and they're expecting something solid, which these things can do, but that's the last thing they expect. And it just shows how this stuff is around us 24/7. And it's just letting go, and like James says, rising to the occasion where, once you do that, they'll drop down in frequency because you're meeting them halfway, and whatever's going to happen is going to happen.
Exactly. Yeah. So, just clearing out. That's why the clearings are so important, because you end up finding out what you end up realizing is that when you start to kind of put the elements, you watch their behavior, and you feel this is the time when they actually will do something, and you start to really, it's very abstracted. It can be very abstract at first and really hard to put words to, but it's like when you match the radio channel with them, it's like tuning the radio or whatever. Once you start to have those hits, internally, you start to realize that, a lot of times, oh, the only thing that's blocking that is the, different, you know, negative, sometimes negative energies or different attachments. So that's why the clearings become so important. It's not like we need to do something that's unnatural. We just need to go back to the natural state, which is a lot easier to get in touch with contact. But yeah, I ended up, sorry, I skipped a part of your question
You're
there.
Welcome.
So yeah, the Sirius film came out 2 years ago and we were involved with the translation. It first started with, you know, I was on a mailing list and they said, hey, you know, we're getting people from all over the world to just give a quick, salute on an iPhone. So just send over a video. So I did that. And then I found out that, they were planning on doing the Japanese translation via auto translator, you know? So I said, hey, I got in touch with the production company and said, please let us at least translate it, you know, with human, human, skills here. So that started the journey. So we ended up, they were going to prepare someone who ended up canceling. So we, five of us here, without seeing the film, did it in like 2 weeks. We rushed through and did the whole thing. So that was, yeah, we were screening it here right from the beginning. And that was sort of the real key. You know, that was the first break of disclosure here. So I kind of always say, you know, try and imagine, you know, this, the Disclosure Project or these kind of whistleblower, try and imagine a world without any of that information here now in 2015. And it's kind of hard to do, you know, when in the English speaking world. But that's where we're at. So I had to start from square one. It's like, you know, that's sort of like the one place that everything else launched from in a way in the after 2000, 2001. So, it's been great too. And I made a real point not to make it a C5 contact, PR session. So I really, you know, I'm really not good at PR anyway. But
yeah, you want to keep it as simple because you can do the heading in 1 minute.
Yeah, and I know there's a lot. We're trying to appeal to the people who may not even be supporters of what we're doing. So I think it's that kind of film and that kind of information has the power to open a lot more minds than even the people who are supporting now. So we were just trying to be as objective as possible. We had screenings in Tokyo with over 200 people there at times. It was amazing. So yeah, we're just running down the our screenings this year. Thanks to the film, though, our mailing list has gotten quite a lot bigger. So we're gonna do Contact Has Begun. You know, I've had the rights for that for now.
Yeah,
almost,
James
almost a year, so.
James Gilliland.co. Well, there for some of the the stuff that you were doing as well, which is fantastic. That's so basically you're getting that doco and then doing the Japanese translation and maybe adding a few extra bits from the trip.
Exactly. Yep. So this time last month, I got a lot more. I got some stuff I had never been able to film before. You know, I got a little bit of the table work, really class, really nicely filmed with James and Ashley there in backlight, they're in silhouette. It looks really nice. So yeah, I've just been trying to do one of our goals is to present this in as much the quality you saw in Sirius. You know, that makes a huge difference in everything. Good, your video of the ranch looked great too. Congratulations. So yeah,
It's something I'll do with the free movie program and a little 4K camera.
Yeah. Well, no, it's good. You got a lot of the, you know, you really did a nice job profiling. I've shown that to some people before they came out just to say, hey, this is what the place looks like. It's nice to have that all on record, you know?
Yeah.
So again, I look at James and Dr. Greer as I call them senpai here, which means older, you know, the ones that have gone before, you know, kind of, or, you know, sort of like older brothers, older
got
teachers.
Sensei and senpai, and then it comes down to done a bit of Goju Ryu in my time.
Yeah, you know the words. But again, it's the thing was that I never was involved. It's funny that I didn't, you know, but then again, I didn't meet James until, what was it, 2011 or 12 on my second visit to the ranch. And at that time, I was already I was in preparation for the tour, you know, and we did a major magazine interview that time. And then, with the SETI community, I've never had any direct relations. So I hadn't even been to one of their events. So, but I got a lot of great support from some of their veteran members and stuff. But it's really been, again, like we're out here on an island nation and I was really kind of isolated so that I could do my own thing that needed to happen here without a certain, you know, without any unnecessary bias, you know what I mean? Or,
How much of a change have you seen since you've been doing this the last 5 years? Like even on the public scale, or I guess even people opening up, going, "I'll give this a try. I'll come and see what it's about." How receptive is it over there in Japan?
It has been amazing. The support here has been just off the hook. And the work I've been nose to the grindstone just doing the events and all the logistics that that comes with. But it has been just a nonstop. Nonstop series of introductions and meeting more and more people. We've gotten into the military witnesses here as well a little bit, and briefing and or having private sessions for all sorts of people who are high up in the spiritual field here, who have their own schools, and even from the very beginning, I was meeting like the sort of local elite, the local spiritual elders and things like that of all shapes and sizes. And then, thanks to Sirius, there is now a complete, the TV people here are completely on the anti-disclosure thing. You know, the media here is so controlled. You know, there's that term bread and circus. it's the Japanese variety TV here is just so it's just mind control to the nth degree, they've ridiculed all sorts of they have a show at the end of every year which deals with a lot of supernatural and these kind of topics. So we went from in 2010 when Jay said he started, there was like a lull, there was absolutely nothing going on in the field. And we've seen a lot of counterintelligence, and now it's like a flood of they're taking shots at everything we've done on TV before. I'm gonna have a blog series coming out. I've just been too busy to write it, but they're using full blown very high level CIA disinformation techniques here they're doing a lot of they'll put. The people who sort of look the same, but they're not at all, and they're sort of these, they're trying to do everything they can to kind of confuse or stop what we're doing here.
So much different from the West.
No, but it's way more. Not really, but I think the West in the Western TV. I see that a lot of UFO stories now have just been reduced to quick little bits on TV, quick little bits on the news. Here they've got these 2-hour specials going now, and they're just, it's all about revival. They're just using old footage from these old shows that are long. In America, we used to have Unsolved Mysteries all the standard, all the information that we know now was disinformation. basically, and military, negative ET contact, et cetera, et cetera. All those UFO myths, they're just recycling them now. There was Skywatch culture here, believe it or not, with the Adamski. They had a pretty rich history of Skywatching, but they've used some of those people to kind of camouflage, what we're doing here. They had two people in the news last year, Peter, where they attacked, the lasers using those illuminators. They had these people, they must have been, set up. They had these two people in Tokyo, two instances within a month where someone was lasering a helicopter or a plane and got arrested, So they have just been trying to pick apart every element that they can of what the contact is that we're doing here. So that's flattering in a way, but
that's happened here too. I actually got hit out in the media here for doing that, and then I'm like, they're like, it was planes, and I'm like, well, this is a craft going past a plane. This is a craft going past, the International Space Station, and the same thing. I said, look, if people are using these things on friggin' police helicopters, put them in jail. They're absolute idiots. But when you go into the specifics, like even the laser company had a go at me and stuff that too. And I said, well, unless I'm at the cockpit, how can I get in the cockpit? How can you shine a laser through a cockpit of a plane? You can't. You just, unless they're landing or taking off, it's impossible. Yeah. So the things only go around 2 miles, the one that I had anyway. And if they're doing it to helicopters, well, they deserve it. And it's the same sort of techniques. They're doing what they're doing in Japan. They've done here.
Really?
Maybe not as bad because it's getting newer there, but there's been a bit of a spin here in Australia. There's still a bit of a tongue-in-cheek piss take on some of this stuff. When I was on National Morning News here for Sunrise, it's a big Channel 7 program, they thought they had someone that they just thought was some redneck for the bush. And when I hit him up with, you know, facts about military personnel and astronauts, John Callahan, they just didn't know what the hell to... You could tell them, cut, you know, like, get him off. But there seems to be this attack, but it seems like you're in the belly of the beast there with this. But it is doing good. It's opening people up, which is what it's about.
Yeah. I've been guided not to, you know, it's been very hard to, you know, it's tough not to want to protect your work and everything. But I've been guided not to, you know, I was tempted to really kind of do some bashing because, you know, most of the people who are on the pedestal, the media puppets here, you know, we know that they're controlled assets right now. So it's been a really, the scene up until now has been, there's been no one who's really gone against that publicly. So doing the whole serious thing was the first thing that was like, you know, stuff this, you know, we're not doing it your way anymore, you know? Yeah. So, and that's part of the reason, I don't know, that's perhaps part of the reason why my role here as an American, people ask why is an American doing Jay City in Japan? It's like, you know, all of the people who are supporting and taking part, it's all, of course, 100% Japanese, but there's been a lot of, I've seen a lot of people getting threatened and shut down, just because of the, you know, me being outside of the society here is sort of one element that's kind of the ETs have seemed to use what we've been the beings guiding our project have used to be kind of out of this control system. Because for me, you know, I always say, hey, I'm just like a translator in a way, you know, besides the work that we do, anything I put out, it's like, you know, I'm either A, translating or B, it's, you know, it's pretty standard fare for, you know, it's not, I don't have access codes to some black projects in any, you know, corporation or, you know, any USAP, you know, project going on. It's not like I'm doing like that kind of whistleblowing right now, but I'm just trying to give the picture, give a base to what the contact we're doing for people out here. But yeah, like, as you said, it's they'll use those dummies, you know, again, I refused to be on that show. I turned them down. They have the number one year-end special show that's like 2 or 3 hours, and the first year when Sirius came out, they brought on some other guy. You know, the one thing they also used here is the elderly, the age difference. You know, it's the young people here don't have a lot of clout in what's you know, and it's always like the elderly, the older folks who get the mic and the stage. So they brought on this old guy doing this Adamski revival thing, and he got used. And and then the next year they asked me to go on, and it was basically saying like, hey, you're going to come in and we've created this box that you can fit in, and here you go. And I said, no, thank you. And they, even what they did was they used a guy from my area, this complete dummy who turns out to be a photographer for the local Air Force. So this guy popped out of nowhere. And then when people talk about the show, they say, oh, who was on the show? And they're like, oh, there was a guy from, you know, Fukuoka, that's where I live. And it's like, and then that, anyone who hears that's going to think me.
Yeah.
Because they don't know this other guy. I'm the one with the books out on the topic. I'm the one who's been on, you know, national TV before. It's like, you know, so they use all this real dirty tricks, you know, just a whole slew of dirty tricks there. So like the guy you're talking about, the guy with the bush, the disinformation is really it's a containment tool.
Yeah.
The people close to us aren't going to be, the people who are really interested are going to be able to probably figure it out, but it's so that it doesn't really get too out of control.
Yeah.
And the people who, one thing the ETs have told me, or a message I got, was that the disinformation occurs on the surface. It works best on a surface impression. And so the people who are just looking at the television during, you know, half looking at the TV during morning coffee, see you and the guy, and then some redneck guy from the bush, and it's like they can't tell a difference, you know. It's like, so luckily you were able to tear him up on the spot.
Well, you know, there's so much out there that, you know, I think the community itself does a good job of tearing itself a new one as well, the UFO community. But it's good to see, for the first time in years, really, like, there's still always a division, but people are starting to drop the barriers and work together, which is great. And, you know, we saw that when, you know, Sol and myself were there with you and James and meeting the different crews and that. In saying that, how was, how did the Japanese people receive James after the trip? Like, what was the, you know, what did they have to say after visiting the ranch? And you've done two trips this year already, haven't you?
Three. Yeah, we just did one more last month.
You might
last
as well
month.
Get your
yeah.
own bloody room or caravan there.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I need a RV plot, an RV out there. Yeah. No, it's, they just loved it. You know, every group is so different. It's really a challenge to, I know it's that tour, nothing can go on autopilot. You know, it's a tour that's not going to ever really be able to get, more than 15 or 20 people max. Cause it's everyone's having, their own experience there in such a deep way. Some of them can't even speak the language, but they have these interactions with James and the staff there that have been really, really profound. And, of course we've, as of this year, we've had, the privilege to have his, little self-mastery training, you know, a compact 1 day, workshop with James. So that's, we had a lot of FaceTime there. And then of course we, what's cool about the tour is that, recently we've all been doing the personal sessions, the TPR table sessions, right on the first day. So that's kind of gets everyone on the same page for the whole tour. So yeah, just to feel that difference has been great. And they come back, they can't wait for him to come out to Japan. So that's
yeah, he's
be
looking
exciting.
At going there and here very soon.
Yeah,
so we're pretty stoked about that. We've actually started including some of the table tipping sessions with the Skywatch.
Okay, nice.
Doing that,
yeah.
So the weather's, you know, getting good here because we're based in Melbourne. That this is really prime time to get out there and start doing it. Though we're getting a lot more daytime stuff than anything else, but it's absolutely awesome that you're doing what you're doing and, you know, doing those trips. Like, it's good, small, you know, as you said, you know, 12, 15 people. It's a good size group to do that, and
yeah,
like we've talked about, you just want to come down under, come down here, and we'll show you around. You're looking at going to New Zealand maybe sometime too, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely. In this March or something, think about trying to head down there. So yeah, I'd love to stop by. Yeah, and do a. It'd be cool to do a collaboration trip over there too.
Definitely, that would be awesome.
So,
once James comes down here, I think, you know, a lot of people looking forward to that, just like Japan. I think that will get the ball rolling for a lot more different projects going on. But it seems that there is this uprising of more and more people doing CE5 and maybe, you know, their own protocols. The way, you know, James does it is totally different from Dr. Green. It's the same as myself. You sort of sit back, put the intention out, and, you know, I can't stress enough, like you got to do your clearings. You just don't want to invite any Tom, Dick and Harry in because... You know, if you don't know what you're doing, you're not gonna know how to deal with the psychic attack or, you know, negative entities. But is there other groups starting up in Japan? Are you seeing anything like that? Because people see what you're doing. Is anybody else trying to start up their own CE5 and that?
Yeah, a little bit. Let's see. Yeah, there's I know there's one other guy in the Tokyo area. They've done a few events. Definitely they've been gone, I think, for a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. I never had the time to do an English speaking. I was asked by some people we did a couple English based screenings of Sirius in Tokyo, and I was asked at that time to help lead a group that had interest, and I was so busy with other events that I didn't have the time. So we've been really focused in on the local Japan scene there. So that there's sort of an expat CE5 group there. Pretty much we've been running steady, as the main thing. There's been a couple people who have, definitely, are supporters who do their own work, when I'm not there, for practice. But really we've been, it's sort of like they're with the whole spiritual school thing is, you know, I'll give you an example, like Hemi Sink, and I don't want to throw out too many names, but I'm just trying to think, you know, all the different kinds of yoga schools and different really, who else? I'm trying to think, you know, different, a lot of Western schools of spiritual thought have been brought over here, like even TM meditation. That was really big here as well. The Maharishi meditation. So, a lot of those kind of develop into companies and businesses here. It's a very commercial scene.
Yeah.
So we've been really trying to avoid that as much as possible. So that's really the thing where it is, and with the series as well, with like donations and everything, there is no culture for that here.
Yeah.
It's very, it's unbridled commercialism to put it quite frankly. So that part does not jive with the whole, volunteer spirit. People here kind of want to be guided. They'd rather have it in a package and buy it, you know? So that's been really, that's been a learning curve for me. Again, one of those unexpected sides of it. So we've been keeping it grassroots as much as we can. You know, I do charge for the events just for the amount of how it's expensive to move around as much. I've paid for most people who do events like I do. Well, we do our own events, so we cover all our own costs with the admission fees and everything. We all share the hotel fees and everything. You know, one of the things I was told when I was coming back here is there are so many places to do events here, which was true, you know, whether it be, you know, luxury hotels all the way down to, you know, little cottages and camp areas. We've done it all, you know, everyone's sleeping on the floor of someone's house. Yeah. And, you know, we go out until 3 a.m. some nights. We've done the whole kit and caboodle. But so right now, I'm a little wary of a timeline hijacks. I don't even write a lot of future plans down. But I've gotten the next stage come down. We've worked with the publishing places here to get this information out. All so that's why I've enlisted the help of, you know, James's stuff and the disclosure stuff, Dr. Greer stuff. So people need to have it all. We were influential in getting all that out. And laying that ground floor in these past 5 years. But now we're going to really start to get back to the main thing, which was our own contacts. So getting our own videos out there. And I've gotten a new download as far as what our next real big thing is in taking this CU5 program to the next level. Awesome. And it's not going to involve any real publication. The ETs have really been a balancing act trying to, you know, be here in this world and not in it at the same time. So, a lot of other projects, not in the UFO field, but they've really kind of gone commercial, and you can see how they roll downhill and the whole thing goes bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's definitely about keeping that balance.
Yeah. But in order to answer your question, sorry, a little more directly, is that I think the tools and the, you know, we created a, I call it the, you know, the Universal Ambassador Series 1, 2, and 3. The first CD is a solfeggio, you know, the training frequency, yeah, yeah. Other frequencies. And that's just a way to, you know, kind of start to slowly awaken the energy bodies and do a little brain tuning there and open the heart with that 528 frequency. And then the second one is a translated, some of the CU5 meditations we translated and a couple of original ones on my own there, as well as some background music people can use in the field. And then a third one we created was a DVD. This was like the first in any CU5 group anywhere. I was able to create like a simulation to show people how the ships kind of come out, the light ships move around. So we used some computer software to do that. And I'm hoping to re-release that one and get some free stuff up online. So awesome. I think we're trying to repackage the tools we've had. It's been interesting. We were guided to make that stuff, but then I haven't done anything to promote them, and it just kind of moves on its own. It's been really organic like that. So again, in the first half a year, my hands were off the steering wheel. You know,
yeah,
look,
yeah.
Ma, no hands. No, it's just that kind of project.
It just happens how, mate. And in saying that, I will put up a link to from the Australian eSETI website to yours as well. I've done it to James as well, so
thank you.
I'll include it there. But look, we'll wrap it up there, and thank you so much for taking the time to come on. And I'd like to get you back on in future sometime, and
have updates
and see where things are. And it'll be good to catch up in person.
Definitely. Yeah, it was such a pleasure to meet you guys. And I really, that being said, you've done a great job on your site with getting all those different tools. You know, there was even some, I got one of those non-touch thermometers. I got the wrong type, and a friend of mine who just had a baby, I gave it to them. They loved it, so I'll have to get a different one. Some
There's
of them
heaps of
you
good
can't do the
tools.
reading. Yeah, so all those different DIY tools, they can be helpful in helping us realize that the contact is actually possible. But then once you start to get to that certain point, then you don't need any tools at
Well,
all.
that's what
So.
I've been saying. Like, oh, I don't have the equipment. It's like, you don't need equipment. The equipment's just there to help document it. That's all it
Yeah.
is. It's there to help
Yeah.
document it. So, anybody can
My.
do what we're doing. It's just, you don't need the equipment. You just need the intention. And what's going to happen is going to happen as long as the intention's right. And can't stress enough, you've got to do the clearing.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, we've I noticed that Japan has a lot of fourth dimensional energy in a lot of ways. People have different thought forms. They hold in their emotions, and that builds up in different thought forms, as well as all the land, the ancient element to a lot of land here. We've had to do a lot of clearings just to get contact happening. So that's become a real part of our protocol as well. I totally agree. Yeah.
Awesome
Yeah,
stuff.
next time it'd be cool to talk about the other all that. Next time we'll go into 4D energy versus astral level energy versus the real higher dimensional
That
stuff,
would be awesome. That would be awesome. And we'll sort something out with that, definitely. And I think that would be of benefit to a lot of our listeners and viewers that are right into this, because that's a really good introduction to you, because like you're saying, there sort of hasn't been that done before in terms of the length we've just covered. And now we can get into the hardcore stuff, as I call it, the what's behind it and all that sort of thing. So again, mate, thank you so much for coming
Open
on
up
the show.
some
It's been an absolute pleasure, and we'll chat soon, mate.
Excellent, Peter. Thank you, Matt. Thank you very much. We'll see you next time.
Yep. Cheers, mate.
Thanks. Bye-bye.